This Week in Nuclear, episode number 34, November 4th, 2006. Welcome to the show. I'm John Wheeler, and you're listening to This Week in Nuclear, a podcast where I focus on the peaceful use of nuclear energy that will make our Earth cleaner, safer, and less reliant on fossil fuels. I've got a big show in store for you today. Lots of news, some listener email, and a walkthrough of my new website that I'm really excited about. The website's live now, and you can find it at thisweekinnuclear.com. But I'll get to the website after the news. In our first story this week, Russia's nuclear program was in the news a lot. In fact, there's a lot going on that demonstrates how serious Russia is about capturing a larger share of the world's market for building nuclear plants. This past week, they won the long-awaited bid to build two nuclear plants at the Belene station in Bulgaria. Before we get into the details of that deal, I want to review the history of the project and the energy supply situation in the region. Bulgaria has four pressurized water reactors, all Soviet vintage, operating at the Kolzhedoy station. Together, they provide more than 40% of the nation's electricity, plus there's enough left over for export to neighboring states. Going down the list here, at Kolzhedoy, units 3 and 4 are both VVER-230s, and units 5 and 6 are both VVER-1000 units. Bulgaria has been the largest exporter of electricity in the Balkans, but in a little over 1 month, that will be a thing of the past. That's because they'll be shutting down units 3 and 4 as part of their agreement for entry into the European Union. This is a really bad idea. And it's really unnecessary because all four of their units underwent extensive safety upgrades in the 1990s. That'll leave Bulgaria with only two operating nuclear units and a power shortage. Russia will make huge profits on the situation because not only will Bulgaria be buying electricity from them, but Russia's energy sales to the other Balkan states will increase to fill the gap that will be created by the closure of Kolzhedoy 3 and 4. There's a group called the Initiative Committee on Defending the Nuclear Power Plant at Kolzhedoy, and they're fighting to keep the units open. They're conducting a roundtable meeting on December 13th with local government officials, and perhaps the European Union will show up as well, but they really don't have much of a shot at keeping the plants open. Construction on a coal-fired plant began earlier this year in Bulgaria, and it'll be online in about 2009. Well, so much for the European Union's plan to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. Here they're mandating the shutdown of two nuclear plants and replacing the power they generate with coal. Where's Greenpeace when you need them? Now back to the Belene project. By the way, the new plants are worth about $5.1 billion to Atomstroy Export. Construction was started on two plants at the Belene site in the 1980s, but it was stopped in 1992 because of a shortage of funding and because of strong opposition by Greenpeace and other anti-nuclear groups. In April of 2005, the Bulgarian government approved construction to start up again, and they began the process then of deciding who would build the plant. I've covered different aspects of those deliberations in prior episodes of This Week in Nuclear. It's taken over a year and a half for them to reach their decision, but finally they've selected Atomstroy Export to lead the project. This deal will give Bulgaria two 1,000-megawatt AES-92 version reactors, each with a design life of 60 years. Atomstroy Export apparently plans to use some of the equipment and components that are still on the site from their earlier construction project, and that helped offset the cost of the construction project, which gave them the lowest bid. By the way, Gazprom, the Russian gas company, owns more than 40% of Atomstroy Export. That little fact would keep me awake at night if I was trying to build a nuclear plant and get it finished on time. every month that the project is delayed is one more month that Gazprom can sell energy, and Belene will be stealing huge profits from Russia the minute it connects to the grid, not just in Bulgaria, but in the entire region. That alone would have led me to another reactor supplier. Anyway, Areva and Siemens are in on the deal too. They're subcontractors and equipment suppliers. And Russia's nuclear business was in the news for other reasons. The Russian government is planning a restructuring and takeover of all the nuclear plants in their country. In fact, their parliament is negotiating the terms of a new law now that'll consolidate all their nuclear assets and businesses, operating power plants, their internal nuclear supply company, and their international business, all under a single company. I've said before that Russia's making a play for the world energy market any way they can, and by taking over control of their nuclear business and putting them under a common operating authority, they'll be able to implement a more coordinated nuclear energy strategy. The new organization will be called Atomprom. Just when I finally got used to saying Atomstroy Export, they have to go and change the name. Anyway, we'll be covering this story more in the future, and it's very interesting on how the world politics are playing out in the energy supply of the future. Speaking of the energy supply of the future, this week, Saudi Arabia, Algeria, Morocco, Tunisia, Egypt, and the United Arab Emirates all notify the International Atomic Energy Agency that they plan to build nuclear power plants. At least three of these Mideast nations are considering using nuclear reactors as a heat source to desalinate water. That's something I've thought was a good idea for years, and I'm surprised it's taken this long for it to catch on. The announcement signified a shift in policy for Saudi Arabia, who in the past has opposed nuclear plants in the region. Well, you might ask, why would Saudi Arabia want or need nuclear plants? They have more oil than they'll ever use. Well, that's not the case. They know their oil wealth won't last forever, and they need to develop other forms of energy so they won't be left without it 50 years from now. There's a saying and a quotation by Saudi Arab oil barons that goes something like this. My grandfather rode a camel. My father drove a car. I fly an airplane, and my grandchildren will ride a camel. They know their oil will run out, and they're predicting that it will happen in their grandchildren's lifetimes. I think it's wise that they're beginning the process of building a nuclear energy infrastructure now, when they can use a small fraction of their oil wealth to invest for the future. It's also a great business move, because the less oil they use at home, the more they can export. And electricity and steam for desalination that is made from nuclear plants is far cheaper than if it's made from oil. This is very simple economics, and it's a logical step for them to take. This announcement has some non-proliferation strategists proclaiming that they're all out to match Iran's nuclear weapons program, but I think that's unfair. Every nation has the right to build nuclear plants as long as they follow the guidelines that are set forth by the International Atomic Energy Agency, which this group appears to be doing. And here's another observation. None of these nations have threatened to wipe their neighbors off the face of the map, nor have any of them supported terrorists. This week, Australia's Prime Minister John Howard spoke out in favor of nuclear energy when he stated that, quote, Australia would be foolish not to consider nuclear energy. He also said nuclear power is potentially the cleanest and greenest of them all. Well, Mr. Howard, you are absolutely right on both accounts. The Prime Minister was speaking to the Queensland branch of his Liberal Party. His talk was full of pro-nuclear remarks. He also said that Australia would be foolish from their national interest point of view if, with their vast resources of uranium, they were to fail to consider nuclear power. Howard said the growing concern about global warming caused by electricity generated by greenhouse gas-producing fuels was causing people to rethink their opposition to nuclear energy. Hey everyone, I was just joined by my daughter, Alexandra. Alexandra is here, and she's a freshman at Highland High School. And anything you want to say to the worldwide audience of This Week in Nuclear podcast?
I really have no idea.
Oh, come on. You got a better idea than that. Anyway, here, we'll be talking about a couple of stories, and maybe you can give us your thoughts on them as we go.
Okay.
Anyway, I was talking about Australia and how the Australian Prime Minister has been talking about promoting nuclear energy in Australia, and it's kind of interesting because right now Australia doesn't have any commercial nuclear plants, but they have the largest reserves of uranium in the world.
Oh.
That seems strange.
Yes.
So there's a big debate going on in Australia as to whether or not they should start using nuclear power plants to produce their electricity.
You know, they really should if they have all that uranium, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, because...
But here's the deal, though. They have a lot of coal, too.
Yeah.
And because they have a huge coal industry, there's a lot of political pressure for them just to continue to burn coal,
mm-hmm.
which is dirty and it pollutes the air.
Yeah, that's not smart.
No, it's not smart. Anyway, John Howard, who's the Prime Minister of Australia this past week, was given a speech, and he was spoke out very heavily in support of growing their nuclear power business. And one of the things that he said was, and I quote him here, "I believe that the world attitude towards nuclear power is changing, and Australia's attitude is also changing."
Mm-hmm.
So that was a good statement from Prime Minister Howard.
Mm-hmm.
My other news from Down Under this week comes from one of my listeners, Michael Walsh, who is the operations manager at the Opal Research Reactor. Or his exact title is the Acting General Manager of Reactor Operations of the Australian Nuclear Science and Technology Organization. His note said that on November 3rd, he let me know that the Opal Research Reactor had just achieved 100% power for the first time, and that their startup went smoothly and without any incidents. That's just the way we like it.
Yes, that is.
Smooth and without problems.
Yeah.
Way to go, Michael. Anyway, congratulations, Mr. Walsh, and the rest of the staff at the Opal Research Reactor for a job well done. I've covered the Opal Research Reactor on a couple of earlier shows, and you might recall that it's a multi-purpose research reactor that was supplied to Australia by an Argentine company called Arpansa. It's a 20-megawatt pool-type reactor that uses low-enrichment uranium, and it's cooled by water. And the reactor is used for producing medical isotopes for use in things like chemotherapy and for radioisotope production and radiation services. You know, what is a radiation service? If you need to have something bombarded with neutrons, then you go there and you pay them and they put it in front of a neutron beam and bombard it. Anyway, they use that stuff for research. Let's see. In Japan this week, they announced that they've begun commercial fabrication of nuclear fuel that's reprocessed from used reactor fuel, and they'll have the first batch ready by mid-November. The uranium-plutonium mixed oxide fuel, or MOX, as it's known in the industry, is made at a facility in the town of Rokkasho in northern Japan. The factory will reprocess 800 tons of used nuclear fuel per year once it's in full operation. And the company, Japanese Nuclear Fuels, is owned by 5 Japanese nuclear utilities, and 2 of them have already gotten approvals to start using the reprocessed fuel to make electricity. Now, this is another example of where the USA has allowed politics to get in the way of sound judgment and scientific principles. Japan is reprocessing now. The French have been reprocessing fuel, and other countries have been reprocessing nuclear fuel, but the United States hasn't.
Mm-hmm. Why is that?
Perfect question. We stopped reprocessing back in the 70s when President Jimmy Carter passed a law that prohibited it. He was afraid that reprocessed fuel, which produces plutonium, would provide an opportunity for terrorists to get a hold of weapons-grade material.
Ooh.
It really doesn't make sense, though, because in order to reproduce plutonium into a nuclear warhead, you have to have a really large factory and enrichment facilities. It's not something that somebody can do in their basement.
Mm-hmm. No, it's not.
It's not. If they try to, they die from the radiation poisoning from the spent fuel. But anyway, reprocessing is the right thing to do because when nuclear fuel is taken out of a reactor, it still has more than 90% of the energy left in it. And if you don't use it, it goes to waste. So when we reprocess it, we can remove the impurities that build up during the fission process. And those impurities are the things that stop the fission chain reaction from happening. So when you take out the impurities and you refabricate the fuel, then you can put it back into the reactor and you can burn it over and over again. And in the end, the amount of actual waste that needs to be dealt with is a small fraction of the original amount. That's one reason why anti-nuclear groups oppose reprocessing. It takes away one of their main arguments against nuclear fuel and nuclear energy, the argument that it produces huge amounts of waste. In reality, though, even without reprocessing, the amount of volume of the waste is very small. If you took all of the used fuel from all the nuclear plants in the country and you put it in one place, it would take up less space than the pile of toxic ash from one coal power plant.
Wow.
By the way, that toxic ash that... When coal power plants burn coal and they take the ash, that ash contains mercury and a lot of other very toxic materials, and it has to be stored in a special landfill that nobody can ever build on or go near, because mercury and those other heavy metals, they never go away, unlike radioactive materials, which have a half-life. They do go away over time.
Yeah, they do.
And they should be. You know, it's interesting. Australia has all this coal, and they're burning all this coal, and they're afraid of nuclear energy, so many of their people, but it's mostly political because you know that there's more radioactivity released to the air from coal plants than from nuclear plants?
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you know why?
Why?
Because coal comes from the earth, and within the ground and within the coal... there's naturally occurring radioactive material. So when they burn the coal, that radioactive material goes up into the air.
Yeah.
And so they're releasing probably hundreds of times more radioactivity to the environment than nuclear plants do.
Oh.
But yet they're not regulated. The government doesn't monitor the amount of radiation that's released by coal plants.
They should monitor it.
They should, you're right. Anyway, I mentioned that we're getting started on reprocessing again. You know, President Jimmy Carter banned it, and once the infrastructure was dismantled, it didn't come back, even though President Ronald Reagan overturned that rule. The U.S. Department of Energy is in the process of sponsoring projects to get reprocess going again. The U.S. Department of Energy is in the process of sponsoring projects to get reprocessing going again. And several companies are actively pursuing it, like General Electric and Areva. And someday we'll be viewing all the used nuclear fuel as a vital resource because of all the energy that's still inside it, not as something that we want to bury out of sight. So I mentioned a few weeks ago that I was working on a new website for the show, and it's finally ready, and in fact I launched it this morning. Now I want to walk through a few features that I think you'll really enjoy. First of all, you don't have to change anything to keep getting the show. If you're using iTunes or another podcast aggregator, it'll still work just fine because the RSS feed for the show has not changed. If you get the show via my email list, that's still working too. And if you download the show directly from the website from thisweekinnuclear.com, well, that's not going to be a problem either because you can still find the show from that web address. The new website pulls together my podcast webpage from Podomatic and my blog from thisweekinnuclear.blogspot.com. These two sites still exist, but using the marvels of modern technology, they're being pulled together into the new site. The nice thing is that all your old links still work. The domain name for the site, thisweekinnuclear.com, is still the same, and it points to the new homepage. All the pages have a common look and feel, and there's a menu bar across the top of every page that looks the same, so it'll be easier to navigate. You'll notice if you take a look at the new site that I've put advertising on it. I've tried to make this podcast work without advertising, but the donations just don't cover expenses. So if you want to help support the show, then visit some of the advertisers listed on the website, and I'll point out some other ways you can help too in a minute. The podcast page has an audio player embedded in it that allows you to select and play any episode. That's pretty cool. There's also links to the last several shows and a link to the archive where you can get any previous episode. You can also click on any of the badges on the left side of the page to subscribe using your favorite podcast provider, like iTunes, Yahoo Music, Podcast Pickle, and others. You ever looked at Podcast Pickle?
No.
You can also click on a link if you want to receive an email message whenever a new show comes out. The blog and transcripts page is the old Blogspot page that loads in a frame, so it still looks the same for those of you who are used to visiting my blog. This is where I post the show notes, and you can go there to post comments as well. I'll be posting show transcripts regularly from now on, so you can go there too if you want to read the transcripts. And if you have a blog out there and you want a link to my blog, then do me a favor and update your link so that it points to thisweekinnuclear.com. Some of the older blog pages will point to thisweekinnuclear.blogspot.com, and that link still works, but the new link will go to the home page. The next page on the site is a search page, and this is really cool. And what do you think about this? I got a Google search bar that when you type in a search phrase, it searches all the past episodes of my show.
That's cool.
Yeah, it's really cool. Like, if you want to know which shows that I mention the situation in Iran, you can type in Iran and hit search, and it'll pull up all the shows where I talked about Iran.
Oh, that's really cool.
It is really cool.
Easy.
Easy to use, easy to find things. The other thing that it'll do, it will search the web too, but there's a real radio button that you just got to select search the web under the search bar, and then it'll search the whole internet. Let's see. If you take a look at that, then you'll see what I mean. And by the way, I'll earn Google AdSense points if you use that search bar when you search the internet. So that's another way that you can support the show as well. The next page on the site is an Amazon bookstore that gives you several nuclear energy related books, plus a couple of MP3 players that are good for listening to the show on. There's also an Amazon search bar on this page so you can find other books, music, videos, and electronics that don't show up on the page. And I get asked about podcasting all the time, and so I've decided to share what I've learned on another page. I call it Podcasting Tips. Right now I'm covering podcasting hardware for recording to computers and recording on portable equipment. And in the future, I'll put more information there on audio software, how to edit sound files, podcast hosting, and things like that. So if you're interested in getting involved with podcasting, it's a great resource. There's also a charity challenge page that I'm still developing, and I'll tell you more about that in a couple of weeks. I plan to use that page in the future to promote some charity work that I do. And finally, here's the favorite part of my favorite part of the site. Now you can listen to This Week in Nuclear on your cell phone or PDA. I've got specially formatted pages that you can read on those small screens, and if your cell phone service provider allows you to download audio files, then you'll be able to get the show right on your cell phone. And I've tested it on my cell phone, and it really works cool. It's really awesome. So think about the possibilities. You can sign up for my email list using your text message address or your mobile email address, and when a new show comes out, you'll get a message on your phone. Then you can browse right to the show's webpage on the screen, and This Week in Nuclear will come blasting through the airwaves wherever you are. You'll also be able to access a few of the past episodes via the phone, so if you missed one, you'll be able to get it. The web address for the new mobile site is thisweekinnuclear.com/mobile. So try it out and let me know what you think. So that's an introduction to my new website at thisweekinnuclear.com. Please check it out and give me some feedback. Al, you took a look at it. What do you think about my new website?
It's pretty cool. It's
yeah? Pretty cool. Was it easy to find stuff?
Yeah, it was really easy to find stuff.
Yeah, I like the fact that it's got the same menu bar across every page. It makes it really kind of easy to navigate through the different pages.
Yeah.
But anyway, go there, check it out. Let me know what you think, and I really won't consider it final or complete until I've heard back from some of you. You've tested it out. You can tell me what you think, and I'll incorporate your feedback. Well, that's it. Thanks for listening to the show. I hope you enjoyed the news, and I really hope you get a chance to check out the new website. Try the mobile version, too, and let me know how it works for you. Next week, I'll be at the American Nuclear Society Winter Meeting in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and I'll be appearing live with Rod Adams of The Atomic Show, Eric McElhain of the NEI Nuclear Notes blog, and Randall Parker of the Future Pundit blog. We'll be talking about this wonderful new form of communication, internet-based media. I hope you'll be going to the ANS Winter Meeting, and I hope to see you there. Until then, this is John Wheeler for This Week in Nuclear. Have a safe and happy week.
Bye.
Bye. Take it easy, everybody.